Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we don't have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we don't have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This is movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussy-footing, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
turn, I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker, upmade me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness ever since the Declaration of Independence. We've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years they fed you this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Welcome to another edition of Your World News. After a long, long podcast hiatus, we haven't done a podcast in quite some time. I'm your host, Solomon. Welcome. Get in, get on board. We're about to take another wonderful ride towards information and commentary that is not found anywhere in the corporate media, but you will find it if you search for it. You will find it in progressive, alternative, radical media outlets, such as Black Agenda Report, such as Vox Union, such as yourworldnews.org, and we're playing, we're just playing our minor, our tiny, tiny role in trying to get information out to the masses or to those that have the ability to get it out to the masses. So we may be delivering it to a relatively small number of people, but that relatively small number of people can take that information and metastasize it by spreading it to their loved ones, friends, comrades, and so forth. So we hope that you'll do the same with Your World News and all of our broadcasts and archives and so forth. And as DJ Tony Drake said, you can check us out at yourworldnews.org. That's yourworldnews.org. And also check out our blog at yourworldnews.org/blog. So without further ado, we're going to start the show. We've got a powerful show. This is, I would say, a special. You know, I guess sometimes media folks call it a special or an exclusive. And I would consider this an exclusive. We're going to have, in a few minutes on the show, we're going to have Leonard Rowe, who is the president of the Black Promoters Association. And he's going to be talking about a lot of things that many of us have had these conversations with our friends and loved ones when making observations when it comes to the corporate media, when it comes to Hollywood, when it comes to the racist, the systematic racist images that are routinely found, throughout Hollywood. And now it's just because so many Americans and so many folks that have become, allowed themselves to become mentally obsequious to the media, they're unable to see how viciously racist these imagery and some of the innuendos that are put out there about Black and brown people commonly are, you know, people of color in general that are put out there. Well, Leonard Rowe is going to be talking about some stuff that goes on behind closed doors. Like I said, he was a longtime Black concert promoter, president of the Black Promoters Association, has been dealing with Hollywood on the inside for a long, long time. And I found out about his story through a brilliant piece that was written by Sister Sandy McKinney, former congresswoman from the state of Georgia. You know, she did served 12 years in the House of Representatives and then was the former presidential nominee from the Green Party, where she represented that ticket with her vice presidential candidate, Rosa Clemente. And she wrote a piece last week in Black Agenda Report. Actually, it was written on the 13th of June, 2012, and it's entitled, "What Do Hollywood Executives Call Beyonce, Denzel Washington, and Halle Berry? Nigger, period." And so within that piece, she introduces individuals such as Leonard Rowe, and she tells his story, and within that talks about the fact that he had routinely heard Hollywood executives, white Hollywood executives, describe Black people with such terms as nigger, spade, colored, monkey, Uncle Tom, spook, and coon. No, this is not. You haven't been put into the hot tub time machine. You're not back 60, 70, 80, 90 years. No, this is 2012. This is going on in the so-called new millennium. This is going on in 2012. She also talks about Marcus Washington. And so I really implore you to go on to Black Agenda Report and read that story. Read it. And at the following, at the end of the story, you can find out how to reach Leonard Rowe and Marcus Washington and reach out to them like I did. You know, call them up, email them. Find out how you can help support them in their efforts to bring about justice, because we're going to be talking about in our interview with Leonard Rowe this lawsuit that he has against folks like the William Morris Agency. And where Marcus Washington has filed a $25 million lawsuit alleging racial discrimination, and he filed that in December of 2010. So there's a lot of ways that we can you know, band together to help bring about justice. We're going to be learning about some of those ways in this program, but we're going to be exposed to information. So if you have family, loved ones that think that you're living in a post-racist society, that America is the land of milk and honey and things have gotten better because you have some black entertainers and athletes, you know, running and jumping and acting on TV, they represent a very minute, a very minuscule, infinitesimal number of African Americans or American-born Africans in America. And so don't fall into the hype. You know, the mass of black America is still living in poverty, and black America has been in a perpetual depression. You know, at least 50% of black America still is has no wealth or negative wealth, you know, to their names, to their households. And so, you know, police brutality rages on. We see, it's not just Trayvon Martin, but it's been on and on and on. And so we've seen, you know, black people killed unarmed since Trayvon Martin and before that, we're not living in a post-racist society. And you know, it's important for us to wake up. It's important for us to wake up and to regain our politics and to get our heads out of the sand and to start organizing our communities, stop spending hours on end simply posting things on Facebook. All that time that you're spending on Facebook, you know, which is fine to post information. I post information there as well. But all that stuff that you're doing on Facebook, that folks are doing on Facebook, you know, if you're spending hours on end, not everyone is, but I know there's some folks that, you know, are constantly on Facebook. I'll leave and I'll come back and they're still on Facebook posting things, which is good. But you know, we got to start organizing. We got to start mobilizing. There's no replacement to face-to-face contact. There's no replacement to that. You know, there's no replacement to saying let's meet up at such and such place. All right, and we're gonna set forth, you know, the groundwork for creating an organization or emboldening and enhancing an organization that's geared towards these kind of to disrupting and dismantling these injustices. So without further ado, like I said, we're going to bring on Brother Leonard Rowe, who I've recently had the pleasure to make his acquaintance, and I look forward to being a comrade of his and supporting him in any shape, form, or fashion, because supporting brothers like Leonard Rowe and Marcus Washington means that we're supporting our own cause. They're fighting a valiant fight, and this man has had the courage, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the cowardice of individuals, even within the black community, that are corporate puppets, are white corporate puppets, and refuse to speak out about what's going on in Hollywood, what's going on behind closed doors. But this gentleman, Leonard Rowe, is not one of those individuals. And as I said before, he's the president of the Black Promoters Association. And so we're going to be getting into it. So without further ado, I would like to welcome on Leonard Rowe. Leonard, can you hear me? This is Solomon.
Yes, sir. Yes, I hear you, Solomon. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. It's a pleasure to have you on.
It's a pleasure to be on.
Thank you. So I want to kind of get started. Can you give our listeners kind of a background of what's going on in Hollywood? What really has pushed you to speak out? What are the things that we all should know? And we can just kind of take it from there. So use as much time as you want to describe the situation in Hollywood, what's going on, and then we'll follow up from there.
Well, let me say this. I've been in the entertainment industry for about 35 years now. When I came into that industry, I noticed that the civil rights of minorities was being grossly violated at an alarming rate. But the reason it was being hidden and not talked about is because of people's control of the media. So it wasn't getting talked about. But it's one thing that I noticed, that black people was being grossly violated about, was no African American or people of color was allowed to engage in a contract with white artists for the promotion of a concert. Now, it didn't take me long to understand when I became a promoter in the entertainment industry that I can never reach the level of prosperity that a white promoter could reach when he's allowed to promote both black, white, no matter what type of artist. But I, as a black person, could only promote black artists. And I would like the public to also understand, when our high-profile black artists become what society calls a crossover artist, and that's just a name they put on it when you sell a lot of tickets, they are taken away from the black community as a whole and given to the whites so they could reap the benefits of their prosperity. So when you take Lionel Richie and you take a look at Beyonce now, you take a look at Jay-Z now, and any profitable black artist, they are being controlled and promoted by all whites. And what that do, and I like for people to understand, and what made me file this litigation, because first of all, it was breaking the law. The law says that I should be able to do business with no regard to my race. But I saw these people getting away with this at an alarming rate. And I did not feel that I should sit back and allow my civil rights to be violated this way. But, you know, people are scared to speak out because what they think is, well, I take whatever they give me because if I speak out, I'm going to be blackballed. But you know what? I thought to myself that if Martin Luther King had thought the same way, I would not have been able to live where I live. My kids would not have been able to go to the schools they have went to and so forth. So someone has to speak out. Someone has to be what I call the sacrificial lamb to make things better for other people that follow us. So I decided to bring this litigation and to speak out about it because what people don't understand is the entertainment industry is one of the most racist industries that still exists in our country today, but it's just being hidden. It's being hidden from the public, and people are afraid, people that are aware of it, are afraid to speak out about it. So I knew that something had to be done. So I filed this litigation about it. And when the evidence started pouring in, like you see, Mr. Solomon, when this evidence started pouring in, collusion started happening. Because what goes on here is our courts are being controlled by the same people that commit these horrible acts against African Americans. They have judges in place that turn a blind eye, a deaf ear, and hold their nose to the word nigger being used by these agencies in the entertainment industry and denying blacks equal opportunity and allowing black people's civil rights to be violated. And you know what we have to do? We have to bring it to a head. And we have to publicize it, and we have to make people stand up for the rights of all people, not only African Americans, but for all people, because no one in this country should be violated like people are violated in the entertainment industry. Because when corruption takes over our federal court system, our entire country, our entire nation is at risk to being corrupt. And we cannot sit back and stand for that to happen. So the case that I have, because of corruption, was completely thrown out of court by a judge after 5 years because they defrauded the court system by hiding the word nigger that was used some 349 times. They hid it from me, and it was hid from the court, along with other derogatory remarks, such as calling black people spooks, calling black people coons, calling black people monkeys, and everything that you could think of that's deplorable. That's what they speak about. But you know, what I like for the public to know is this. When anyone make a derogatory remark about those that control the media or those that control the entertainment industry, they are considered the worst people on the face of the planet. For an example, Mel Gibson. He made a statement about the Jewish people control the music industry. That's all he said. Or control the media, I'm sorry. He was blackballed from the industry. And they thought it was the most horrible, the worst thing they ever heard. But they could call us nigger hundreds and hundreds of times behind closed doors, thinking no one would ever find out. But it's okay. But you know what? It's not okay. And we have to stand up as Americans and all people, not only black people, all people of righteousness. We need to stand up and let them know it's not okay for you to do that. So that's what I'm trying to do, and I'm not trying to do it for the sake of myself, not only for the sake of myself. I'm trying to do it for this country and for all African Americans and all people of color, because someone has to do it. We have so many African Americans that will not stand up. The ones that's in a position to stand up and be heard, they will not do it for fear that they will be blackballed. We have allowed people to come in and make donations every year to certain organizations like the NAACP, to certain organizations like the Urban League, the Martin Luther King Center for Social Change. But what you have to understand, Operation Push with Jesse Jackson, and what I want people to understand is this. These donations are made to silence these people so they would never speak out. Now, it's a tax deductible donation that these people give. But in fear of losing that donation, they turn their head to the illegal acts and the civil rights violations of these people. You know, you could take that evidence that you have there, and you could send it to Operation Push. You could send it to the NAACP, and you could ask them to get involved with this court case and to make sure that this type of injustice never happened again. You'll never receive a call back 9 times out of 10. Because when they see who the defendants are, the first thing they think about is they donate money to us. But what they don't understand is that donation is put in place for that purpose, to silence you, to silence you. And that's why the only way that we receive justice in this country as African Americans is by banding together. We must. Black people don't know how powerful they are when they stick together. You cannot think of one cause. You can't think of one cause that black people came together about that was not accomplished. You know, Mr. Zimmerman, down in Florida, he would not have been arrested, I would venture to say, if black people everywhere didn't stand up for justice and demand that he be arrested and charged. Because they had sent him back home. They said, "You're going back home, good job." And that's where he went, back home. But you know what we did? We said no. As an entire nation, we said no to this injustice. And you know what they did? They go react then. You know, any situation where black people has banded together, from Rodney King, when they displayed that horrible beating on him, and black people all over this country was outraged about it, what'd they do? When he went to court in L.A. and they let him go, the federal government moved in and locked him up because they have to calm this country down.
Yeah.
When we wanted a Martin Luther King holiday and half of this country was against it, black people band together and said, "No, we must have it." And what did they do? They gave it to us. So black people must understand the strength that you have.
Yeah.
But you know what? They don't want us to know that. So they keep us separated. They keep us separated. We are consumers, and we must use our buying power to make this country do right. And any time we have anything that's being done wrong, we should stop patronizing whatever that entity is. And you know what? They'll change their ways. But we must stick together. But the injustice that's happening in Judge Robert P. Patterson courtroom, the whole country should be outraged about it in New York. It's the Southern District of New York. under Judge Robert P. Patterson, and for him to turn a blind eye and a deaf ear to the information that you have in front of you that I'm sure you've told your audience about.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole country should be outraged. And I'm going to be frank with you, for him to do what he done in this case, he should be impeached for it. And it should not have allowed to happen. Because if we allow injustice anywhere in our country, it is that threat that injustice will be allowed everywhere in our country.
That's right.
So I just wanted your people to understand that and your listeners. I thank you so much for allowing me to come on your show. And I thank you so much for bringing this topic to your show. Because this
not
is something that needs to be addressed.
Not a problem.
Let me say one more thing, Solomon.
Sure.
There's no other race that they would treat in this manner but African Americans. Because no other race would tolerate it. No other race would tolerate it. But you know, they do it to us simply because they know that we'll sit back and allow it to happen. So I'm asking
right.
this country not to allow it to happen.
Right.
Solomon. Thank you.
What would happen if I was reading in Cynthia McKinney's report on your situation and Marcus Washington's in terms of you guys speaking out and putting this out there? What number one? How widespread is this? Is it throughout the entire Hollywood entertainment industry? And also, what happens if a black promoter, crossed over? You know, once a black promoter crossed over to a white audience, were they allowed to promote white entertainers?
Let me say something to you that's going to be hard for you to believe and probably hard for your audience to believe. There have never in the history of the entertainment industry been a black promoter that have been allowed to promote one white artist. Now, like you said, I was president of the Black Promoters Association for almost 15 years. William Morris have been in existence for 114 years, and they have never contracted one of their white artists with a black human being. But you know what? They do a good job of hiding that from you all because they control the media, and people don't know it exists. But it is awful what they do to African Americans. And if you don't take my word for it. Ask them to provide one contract. Or I challenge you to invite someone from William Morris to participate on your show and put that question before them. Ask them, how many times have you sold Madonna to a black person? How many times have you allowed Paul McCartney to be promoted by a black person? Now, let me tell for those in your audience that don't understand the effects of this. When our people go to the box office or decide to go to a concert, and they stick that $120 through that hole and say, give me two tickets. If a black promoter is promoting that show, that money is passed on throughout our community. You have black caterers. You have black limousine companies. You have black security companies. You have black production companies. And so forth. And the list goes on and on. But when you eliminate black people, when you eliminate black promoters, that money never finds its way back to the black community. That money end up fertilizing neighborhoods like Beverly Hills and commercial areas like Rodale Drive. And it never makes its way back to our community again. So our community is being used once again. But you know what we are asking? We are asking something that's simple and something that should be easy for them to do. We're asking them to just simply obey the law and do business with us with no regard to our race. And that is a law in America that people forget. You're supposed to deal with me with no regard to my race.
Mm.
They don't do that. They don't do that. That's why no black person has ever been allowed to promote a white artist. And they're not going to do it unless they are made to do it by our government.
Right.
They're not going to do it because it's too profitable. what they are doing is too profitable. So when our black people go see Beyonce, or they go to the concert to see Jay-Z, they don't know where the money go when they stick it through that hole. They know y'all don't know where it go. But it ends up in non-blacks' pocket. Non-black companies are participating behind the curtain, and they are controlling everything behind the curtain. So that money never finds its way back to our communities. And that's something we have to demand to stop. We want it to stop. And we want companies to do business with all people with no regard to their race.
Right.
Now, the law says that's what they should do. The law said that's what they have to do. But they don't do it. And our courts are not enforcing the law. And that's what's happening
right
out here.
It seems like what you're saying, you know, when you talk about our collective buying power, and also for folks that don't know, the William Morris agency that Brother Leonard was just talking about, that's headed by Ari Emanuel, the former chief of staff for the Obama administration. His brother, Rahm Emanuel.
Correct.
That's his brother.
That's right.
His brother.
Yes.
You know. And it seems like what you're saying is that, you know, and I totally agree that we need to look at boycotting. And you open up, you know, speaking about if Dr. King did not speak out, where would we be? So all those folks that, you know, those black folks who have been comfortable keeping their mouth shut and they think that they're going to be rewarded by white America for keeping their mouth shut, you know, is monetary gain and the approval, the validation for these white folks, is that worth selling out your race, selling out your people and preventing progress to be made? I don't think so. In my book, it's not okay, and clearly it's not okay in Mr. Leonard's book. What do you think about, you know, when you look at that boycott? Because that boycott in the past has been used effectively by, you know, Dr. King with the SCLC and Operation Breadbasket, you know, and so forth, and different cities that they launched that, saying, hey, if you're not gonna hire black workers within these black cities that you're posting up in, you know, then we're just going to boycott your businesses, and it was quite effective. Is that what you're alluding to?
It's always effective, because what black people don't understand, and they don't understand mainly because people don't want you to understand it. They don't want you to have knowledge of this. We are some of the biggest consumers in America. You know, a lot of us don't run businesses, but we spend money, we work jobs, and we spend money. We have buying power. Let me give you an example. If black people was being mistreated by Coca-Cola, for an example, which I'm not saying they are, but if they were, and we asked all black people to stop buying Coke and buy Pepsi until they straighten the issue out, do you know how long it would take for them to straighten that out? All of 30 minutes. All of 30 minutes. Now, let me give you another example of something that happened. Remember this, something that happened, sir. Do you remember Texaco? Do you remember Texaco employees used jelly beans some years ago in a meeting? The executives of Texaco used jelly beans when they referred to black people.
Yes. Yes.
I was a Texaco user at the time, and I had a Texaco credit card in my pocket. I decided at that moment that I was not going to patronize Texaco any longer until one thing happened. The president of Texaco, the CEO of Texaco, came on Dateline that night with Ted Koppel. And this is what he said. He apologized for them using the terminology jelly beans. And Ted Koppel, and he said he's willing to do whatever need to be done to righten the situation. And when Ted Koppel asked him, are you saying that you are willing to write a check no matter what the amount? to make this situation right? He said, that is exactly what I'm saying I'm willing to do. And he wrote a check to the black employees and Jesse Jackson for $173 million, I think it was. I kept using Texaco. Because if he acknowledged his mistakes and apologized to it and compensate the people for doing it, what else can I ask for? But we are dealing with people that are defiant and believe they have a right to make these kind of insulting, derogatory, name-calling towards black people.
Right.
And they won't apologize for nothing. And
right.
They go in and buy the courts and pay the judges and your own attorneys, no matter what amount, before they apologize to black people. They think they have God-given right to treat us that way. And we should not allow it. Under no circumstances should we allow it.
Right. That's right. What do you, you alluded to certain black folks that know that, you know, they've made the decision to keep their mouth shut. If presented with that opportunity to do a follow-up show, to have them come on the show with you, you said that they would probably decline. Would that include Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson?
Yes, let's do this. And this is what I challenge you to do. I challenge you to take that evidence which you have in your hand, which is undisputable evidence, okay, which the court has. Forward it over to Operation Push to Jesse Jackson. Forward it over to Al Sharpton. Forward it to Magic Johnson. Forward it to any of the high-profile African-Americans that say to us that they stand for justice and they stand for our community.
Mm-hmm.
And see how many calls you would get, or see could you get through the next time you call.
Mm.
You won't be able to get through. Because they don't want to come on and talk about that, because these people give them a check every year. And they do business with these people. But, you know, because you do business with these people, I've been doing business with them too. But I ask them to do right when it comes to African Americans.
Right.
I've been in the music business for 35 years. But I'm not going to turn a blind eye and a deaf ear when you call us nigger.
That's right.
I'm not going to do that. I didn't grow up that way. I'm not going to grow up in America where I pay taxes, where we send our children abroad to die for this country.
To die. That's right.
And be called nigger when I get back home by a group of people that think they have the right to do that. No one in America should allow that. Or else we're shooting at the wrong people when we go abroad.
That's right. I couldn't agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. What can people do that are listening now or listening on to this show on archive? What can they do tangibly to get involved to help you fight this fight? To you know what can folks do? What are the phone calls and the contacts that people need to know for them to get in this fight? Because this fight has everything to do with them and their children. And I say to folks listening, if you don't have children, or you do have children, but say you don't have children, do you really want your children, you know, to be shaped or to have to deal with this kind of these kind of injustices? And it starts here. And so you can't look at it at Atlanta Rose's battle as just looking at Hollywood. But we come together, we band together in a collective manner, and we bring down this house, this corrupt house of cards, preventing it from happening in the future. All right, and bring justice and make sure that those folks who have been carrying this out are held culpable. This will stand as one of those dominoes that will knock that will lead and push momentum towards other injustices that are going on. Say police brutality, police terrorism that goes on in black communities. All right, so you have to look at it that way. We win each time we win one of these small battles, and we come together as a community, or what appears to be a small battle, but it's really a big battle. We make it easier for that momentum to be pushed to another area, because we know in 2012 there's no shortage of racially motivated social injustices that occur in this country to this day. And I think that Mr. Rowe makes a good point that when we come together collectively and we say no, I mean, we've been able to move mountains as people. We've been able to move mountains as people. And so this is, and don't think that, and the reason why you're not hearing about this on NBC and CNN and ABC and Fox News is because they're a part of it. They're part of the corporate media conglomerate. They're in bed with Hollywood. Hollywood's in bed with them. That's why. They don't want Leonard Rose's voice. They don't want his face on NBC. They don't want his face on mainstream television because his face is attached to a voice, and his voice is attached to a story that is very, very significant. And that's why we must be that CNN. And you are very much right, Mr. Rowe. If it wasn't for black folks and black media making the Trayvon Martin issue a national issue, those folks, that white media, that white corporate media, NBC, MSNBC, Fox, whoever, they would have never picked it up. They would have never picked it up because they were given the opportunity to pick it up early on, and they decided, no, that's just another dead nigger in the street. We're not going to report on that. You know what I'm saying? No, we're not going to report on that. But black folks said, no, you're not going to ignore this. We're going to come together, and we're going to make this an issue. And so now we got to keep doing that work so that we can prevent any more Trayvon Martins, Ayanna Stanley Jones, Oscar Grants from ever even happening, from ever even losing their lives. So you got to look at it that way. And so what can folks do, Brother Leonard, you know, to get involved in this fight and to help out?
I plead for your audience to do one thing, and I will give you the number a little later. I plead for your audience to call the federal courthouse in Manhattan, the chambers of the Honorable Robert P. Patterson, and also the chief judge, Miss Loretta Preska, and ask them to obey the law in the Roe versus the William Morris case. That's all you ask them to do. Obey the law and hold these people that are guilty of these crimes accountable. That's all I ask them to do. And it would help our entire community tremendously, because what will happen is if they just obey the law in this case, they will wipe out discrimination in that concert promotion industry. But they're trying not to obey the law. So I plead with your audience to make that call. Call the federal courthouse and ask for the chambers of Robert P. Patterson and say, and leave a message with his secretary or whomever and say, we are asking you to tell Judge Patterson to obey the law in the Roe versus the William Morris case. It's just that simple. And also to the chief judge, Judge the Honorable Loretta Preska, P-R-E-S-K-A, Preska, and ask her also to see that justice is served in the Roe versus the William Morris case. And we have to demand that. We have to demand for them to obey the law, because that is their job. We're not asking for a favor here. We're not asking for preferential treatment. We're asking that they only obey the law, which they have an oath to do. And if they do that, we'll wipe out this racism and this discrimination in this country. You know, what we can't do in this country is this. We can't change a person's soul and make them not racist, but we have laws put in place to where they cannot display it. And that's what we must demand, that they do not display their racism towards us. Okay, Solomon?
Yeah, and would you mind, is there a way, would you mind giving your email out online so that, you know, or I should say on air?
I do not mind. My email is Rowe, R-O-W-E, Entertain, E-N-T-E-R-T-A-I-N, at AOL.com. And please do not put the mint on entertain. It's not entertain mint. It's Rowe, R-O-W-E, Entertain, E-N-T-E-R-T-A-I-N, at AOL.com.
Okay.
And I thank you so much, Solomon, for having me on your show.
Not a problem.
If a lot of people had the courage that you had to speak out about this situation, it couldn't exist in this country. But it's just like you just said, NBC would never allow it. ABC would never allow it. CBS would never allow it. because it's done to African Americans. But if it was done to their own kind, they'll give me an hour on their show to talk about it, each one of them. So I want us done. I want all of America to understand that. So if people don't care about our civil rights being violated, we must care about our civil rights being violated. And we must stand up against that. Thank you so much, Solomon.
No problem. Thank you. And I look forward to doing, you know, a follow-up show with you on this. Because we're going to stay
anytime
on this, and we're in this together. So thank you so much, brother.
Thank you so much. And thank your audience. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. So, folks, that was Brother Leonard Rowe, one of the best known and most successful of all the black concert promoters. And he just laid it down. And I just hope everyone listening understands the gravity of this. This is why it's important. So, you know, first, I mean, if you're going to be using Facebook and Twitter, you know, take the link to this interview. It's not about me. It's about what Your World News represents. And what we simply represent is getting the word out. Getting the word out. You know, we're not supported by no corporation. You know, we pay money for this access, you know, on a monthly basis. So that simply so because this is part of our duty to get this information out. So I'm just asking you to take the link, take the damn link to this show and post it on Facebook. Spread the news. Spread the news. It's not about one person. It's about millions of people. It's about millions upon millions of people who are not even born yet and trying to do the work so that these babies that are not born yet, so that they can invert and they can inherit a much better society that we live in today. So please, please pass that information on. Post it on your Facebook page. Send it on your emails. But don't let Facebook be the end-all, be-all. You know, when folks listen to the radio show, and hopefully that it will get them you know, hopefully they'll be outraged and upset, because those are good emotions to have. It means that you got a pulse to you. You know what I'm saying? Those are good emotions to have. They really are. So hopefully, once they hear the show, they get enraged, they get outraged. You know, or I should say, outraged, angered, and move that anger to some good community work, meaning organize. What can we do? Start getting together. You know, letter writing campaigns, blowing up the phones, you know, figuratively, of course, you know, calling the phones, you know, and calling those phones, you know, ad nauseum, you know, the judges that he mentioned. All right. So that you get on those phones and you just call and you have, you know, as many folks as you possibly can, and you implore all of your networks to call and call and call, all right? And then, you know, and reaching out to Leonard Rowe and finding out how you can continue to help and support him and knowing, you know what I'm saying, what machinations and moves that he's making, you know, so those moves can be supported by not one but by all. So that's some of the work that needs to be done. But, you know, and having, you know, little community forums around this issue, around racism in Hollywood, racism in media as a whole. I mean, we look at the white corporate media, and it sounds like a bit redundant for me to say white corporate media. If you just say white media, and that would mean corporate media. You say corporate media, and you're talking about, by and large, the white media, by and large, you know, that controls the vast amount of information and messages that we see. But this stuff is destroying us as a people. Black folks, it is destroying us as a people, because when we watch and we are consumed with this media, all right, where, you know, since the Telecommunications Act of 1996, black ownership of media has decreased more than 70%, you know, out of all the full power television stations, we control less than 1%, 0.6% approximately of all the full power television stations. Out of all the radio stations in America, we control 3.4% of them, less than 4% of those radio stations. When you put all people of color, it doesn't get much better. We own, you know, all people of color collectively own less than 8% of all the radio stations, and all people of color together own less than less than 4% of all television stations. So it's very, very important, because when the corporate media is able to put out a narrative, because there's no alternative voices or perspectives on that corporate media, we gobble it up. We gobble it up, and we become the same bloodthirsty, you know, bloodthirsty Americans that are running around, you know, chanting war, 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 because they've been told that, you know. So they're told that. So white Americans they're given that narrative, but that narrative also plays a role in emboldening there are already racist or, you know, notions of what they think about people in Central Asia, or Eastern Asia, or folks in Africa, Northern Africa, and Libya. You saw people were banging the war drums. Go in there, get them. Go in there, get them. Get Gaddafi. Go. It didn't matter how many lives were taken. Bomb. And as we know, tens of thousands of lives were taken because the U.S. started its bombing campaign. Its bombing campaign throughout the Northern African country of Libya. Okay, and they were fed a pack of lies about Gaddafi, about the Jamhuria, about the standard of living on the ground. You know, most African Americans didn't know. The ones that were chanting those war drums, they didn't know, and quite frankly didn't care that Libya at the time, not anymore, at the time had the highest living standards in all of Africa, had higher living standards in Brazil and Russia. They didn't care. They didn't care that they had universal health care in their country. They didn't care. They didn't want to look at that and say, damn, they got something that we don't even have as American-born Africans. We don't got, you know, no. They, you know, we were fed a bag of goods, and we bought it up. We soaked it up, sopped it up, ate it up like some nasty, nasty swine that we've been programmed to eat, and we sopped it up and ate it all, just like that poison food that we eat at McDonald's and Burger King and all these other, and at our cookouts, we ate it up, and we poisoned our system. We poisoned our souls. It's time to regain our souls. So this struggle with Leonard Rowe is about media. It's about Hollywood. It's not just confined one place. It's about all of these things. As I said before, it's a domino effect. And so let's talk about something. You know, let's hear something. Since I was just talking about Libya, we see the same narrative going on with Syria right now. We see the same narrative going on right now, the same pack of lies that are being fed to the public by the media, the corporate media, being fed by the Pentagon and State Department is going on right now in Syria. So let's take a listen to this with Brother Glenn Ford from Black Agenda Report.
The afternoon airhead on CNN snarled her revulsion at the very idea that a commentary on Russia's Pravda newspaper would conclude that Syrian rebels, or even American or British special forces, might be behind the killing of over 100 Syrian civilians, about half of them children, in the town of Hula. Why, her country and its Free Syrian Army allies would never do such a thing. But of course, it goes without saying, and without necessity of any proof whatsoever, that the Syrian government slits babies' throats for breakfast. For CNN, the inherent goodness of the U.S. and whoever its allies of the moment might be is a matter of faith. Like her broadcast colleagues, the high-priced talking head had spent most of last year spreading fantastic lies about imminent massacres of civilians by Muammar Gaddafi's government in Libya, massacres that never happened, and covering up the actual slaughter of black Libyan civilians at the hands of U.S.-backed forces. She and her fellow well-paid prevaricators reported as fact that Colonel Gaddafi's soldiers used rape as a weapon of war, fueled by vast quantities of Viagra, a total fabrication. These same corporate media psychopaths pretended to believe and tried to convince the whole world that NATO's 7-month bombing campaign against Libya had killed not a single civilian, or, well, maybe just a few. Now CNN's heroes are the so-called Free Syrian Army, who are obviously the good guys because the U.S. State Department and the Pentagon say so. But the Russian commentary in Pravda is much closer to the truth. In Syria, as in Libya, the United States has allied itself with al-Qaeda and forces that are politically very much like al-Qaeda. Hundreds, if not thousands, of U.S.-armed Libyan jihadis have relocated to Syria. The Saudis and Qataris have sent many thousands more Sunni religious fighters into Syria, where they wage holy war against the secular government. The terror bombings that have claimed hundreds of lives in Syrian cities over the past few months are classic al-Qaeda, as even U.S. officials have been forced to admit. And so are the killings of the children in Hula. The logic of the Hula massacre is the logic of al-Qaeda. In Iraq, al-Qaeda dedicated all its energies to provoking war between Sunnis and Shiites, whom al-Qaeda considers heretics. In Syria, the Alawite minority, to which President Bashar Assad belongs, is a branch of Shia. It is in the interest of Sunni jihadis to make the conflict in Syria into a war against the Alawites, who are overrepresented in the secular government and the army. These jihadis hate both Muslim heretics and secularists. But it is fundamentally against the Syrian regime's interest for the conflict to devolve into sectarianism. And it makes absolutely no sense for the Syrian regime to allow the slitting of children's throats while United Nations observers are stationed throughout the country. However, it does serve the interests of the rebels and their American and European backers, and of course the interests of Israel, which has long sought the dismantling of the Syrian state. Terrified at the onset of the Arab Spring, the U.S. and Europe, along with the royal thugs of the Persian Gulf, decided to unleash chaos in the region, using the most militant foot soldiers at their disposal, jihadis. Ultimately, this diabolical strategy will not make U.S. imperialism stronger, but it will make the world a lot bloodier and far more dangerous. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to blackagendareport.com.
And that was Brother Glenn Ford, and that's not a narrative you're going to hear, not at all, anywhere on the corporate media. It is a joke, and it's a deadly joke. You need to start thinking about that. All right, the corporate media that knows this stuff and chooses to continue to obfuscate the indoctrinated American mind, that chooses to marginalize and to omit key aspects of information in a balanced kind of manner, in a panoramic manner, they have blood all over their hands. They are drenched in blood. You have to look at it that way. They are drenched in blood because they help push along. What do they help push? They help push along the public sentiment that if the public knew that information, you would have a good section of that public. Not all, because, yeah, there's some bloodthirsty savages, animals in America. Yeah, of course. You know, we commonly see them. They come out all the time, especially at the time of war, you know. But you would have some people that bought this bag of goods, this damaged, putrid, bag of goods, that if they were presented this kind of information, this kind of critical analysis, just like if they were presented critical analysis about the war in Afghanistan, they knew, how the U.S., supported the Mujahideen, the so-called holy warriors, in 1996 that made it possible for the oppression of women to march on as it is now, and now that they can reprogram the American mind, Americans are not even thinking about how the U.S. made, this super fundamental Islamic, Taliban, how they put them into power in the first place, pre this war, and how that affected in a very adverse way, some of the gains that were made by, for instance, the People's Democratic Party of Afghanistan, which was backed by the Soviet Union, pre-1990s. and how they made so many gains, women made so many gains, were outnumbering men in universities and were wage workers and so forth. But these are narratives not presented. And so if more Americans knew this stuff, of course, what would they do? They would demand for these wars never to start in the first place. But instead, they buy the corporate media narrative, and what happens? You know, they become the biggest cheerleaders for death and destruction. Death and destruction of men, women, and yes, especially children. Men, women, and children. And so these damn hypocrites that want to talk about, you know, they're against abortion here in the U.S., they don't give a damn about killing babies, especially brown and black babies, especially babies that are Muslim, especially babies that are, you know, Arab. They don't care. They support it. They love the death and destruction of babies. So they need to get off the sidewalks and stop occupying the fronts of abortion clinics and being on their knees and having the little holy cross there and having the signs up and saying, you know, we're against abortion, save the babies. They don't give a damn about it, because you won't find none of those individuals protesting in front of the U.S. Capitol, protesting in front of the White House and saying, stop the wars, stop killing innocent children in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Libya, in Somalia, in Yemen. Stop killing them. Stop killing them in places like Zimbabwe through unwarranted sanctions. Stop killing them. They love to kill babies. Don't you believe it? They love to kill babies. So wake up, folks. Wake up. These are narratives and double standards that you've been trained not to think about, that most of us have been trained not to think about. We've been trained to get the narrative and say, oh, yes, so abortion's bad. We don't want to kill the babies, this, that, and the other. But we've been trained not to think about that, you know what I'm saying? The U.S. was responsible for killing 500,000 children under the age of 16 in the 90s alone through sanctions, through U.S. U.S.-backed sanctions through the U.N. The U.S. was, you know, and when the Secretary of State Madeleine Albright was asked by Leslie Stahl, you know, on national TV on 60 Minutes, you know, if she had any regrets to it, you know, or she thought it was worth it, she said, yeah, it was a tough choice, but yeah, we think it's worth it. Who's we? Who's we? Yeah, you figure that out. Yeah, they have no problem with that. They have no problem with the hundreds of thousands of babies that have been killed since 2003 in the invasion of Iraq. They have no problem with the thousands upon thousands of kids that have been killed in Afghanistan and Pakistan with the cowardice, unmanned drones, and the night raids. They don't care about it. Wake up. This fight for justice that we talk about this show, that has to do with the media, has to do with Hollywood, has to do with everything. It has to do with everything associated with war, because the war narrative is promoted through the biggest propaganda and the most anti-democratic machine in the U.S. and maybe probably the world, and that's the U.S. corporate media. This has been Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon. See you next time.